We will lift the floor for New Yorkers crushed by skyrocketing rents, by requiring developers to build affordable homes for everyday people rather than simply multi-million dollar condos for the most fortunate among us.
Mayor de Blasio from his State of the City address, and now the Domino Sugar Factory becomes a test case for de Blasio housing policy. What looked like a deal to build 2,200 apartments on the Brooklyn waterfront, with 30% of them affordable, is now back in negotiations because the new mayor wants more affordability. Other developers and housing advocates are watching this new drama unfold. At the same time, a new lawsuit claims discrimination against Black and Latino New Yorkers based on the city's property tax rates. The argument is that the higher rate paid by landlords of denser high-rise buildings disproportionately hurts lower-income New Yorkers, mostly Blacks and Latinos, as that's who's mostly renting in those buildings. So let's talk about both these issues. And we might even get to next month's loft law deadline as the Tale of Two Cities mayor tries to reinvent housing policy. With me is WNYC economic development reporter Janet Babin. Hi, Janet.
Hey, Brian.
So Mayor Bloomberg, by way of background, was pursuing an 80-20 policy. If a developer wanted a zoning change to build very high, he'd have to promise 20% of the units would be affordable, below market rate. Do I understand correctly that de Blasio wants to change this formula to 70-30, 30% of the units below market rates to increase the pace of getting affordable housing built?
Well, it's not just that he wants more percentage of affordable units. It's that he wants it to be something called mandatory. Under the Bloomberg administration...
Something called mandatory. I like that. As in,
mandatory,
you have to.
Right. It's termed mandatory inclusionary zoning. So under the Bloomberg administration, Bloomberg encouraged developers and used subsidies and all kinds of other things like tax abatements to sweeten the deal to suggest to developers that they do an 80-20 split on their buildings with 20% being affordable. And he was quite successful. I mean, the goal was 165,000 units. The Bloomberg administration went over that. Housing advocates would quibble with the type of affordable units that were built under Bloomberg and where they were built. They would say that they really were for more middle-income families, and too few of those units were for actually low-income New Yorkers who were really seeking affordable housing and are most desperate for it. But he was successful.
The mandatory part, if I'm not mistaken, can only be applied when developers are seeking a zoning change, right? An exception so that they can build higher than the zoning would normally allow in a given neighborhood. So is that a lot of the new development that gets proposed and built in the city?
I think it is. I think it is because height and density are the ticket now, right? This is the way for developers to make more money. Let's face it, building in New York City is very expensive. Land is incredibly expensive, and so are labor costs, and so is dealing with the Department of Buildings. Everything costs more money in New York, but there's that great payoff at the end for developers because there's just no end, it seems, to the value of real estate in New York City.
So the iconic Domino Sugar Factory in Williamsburg and the numbers in the Times today regarding that development plan are 70-30. It's 2,200 total apartments with exactly 30%, 660 units slated for affordable housing. But the mayor is reportedly reevaluating the deal because he wants more of the units to be bigger, to be family-sized, two-bedroom apartments, three-bedroom apartments. That's an important distinction, isn't it?
Well, you know, I spoke with some people over at Two Trees today.
That's the developer.
The developer. And they said that they, according to them, the city officials seemed agnostic in this meeting as to whether the units had to be bigger or whether it just had to be more space. In their understanding, the city is asking for 50,000 square feet of additional space be dedicated in some fashion to affordable units. Now, that's space equivalent to about 70 or more units. It's a lot more space. I can understand the distinction being made to request bigger units. A lot of times what happens in communities, Brian, think of Atlantic Yards. There's this the people who are displaced to make room for these new developments are oftentimes families. And the families get there's no space for families in a one-bedroom or a studio apartment that often is deemed affordable. Here's your affordable housing. So perhaps that is what the city was requesting, more space for families. I didn't speak with any city officials on this, but the developer says it was their understanding that they're just asking for 50,000
square feet, one way or another.
Right.
So did they think the Times story was overreported? In a certain sense, or they didn't comment on
that? They didn't comment on that.
Is another issue the question of affordable for whom, for the Domino site or in general? Does the mayor talk about remixing the balance between affordable units for middle-class New Yorkers as opposed to lower-income New Yorkers?
Well, this is a huge issue, as I was saying, for housing advocates, and they want to see more truly affordable units for low-income families built. But this is a very complicated mix, and I think that the mayor and his administration has just come on board. He just recently named Carl Weisbrod and Vicky Bean in his administration, along with Alicia Glenn, as deputy mayor of housing and economic development. So we don't know
yet. That's interesting, by the way, because it used to be the position deputy mayor for economic development, and he made it housing and economic development, which is reminiscent of the agency he used to work for in the federal government, housing and urban development. And a decision was made in Washington, and now he's making this decision for New York, that those two things should be paired. When you're talking about urban development generally or economic development generally, that housing is an integral part of that because it's so much at the center of the inequality that is the problem that he wants to address in New York City.
Absolutely. I mean, he has clearly said, he's signaled that affordable housing is going to be the hallmark of how he gets New York City to be more equitable. And it's a huge problem. And speaking of his days at HUD, Housing and Urban
Housing and Urban Development. Slightly different name.
Right. The federal government through HUD is the organization that sets the median income levels on which affordable housing is based. So it's this complicated series of what level are you in this median income, area median income, AMI it's called. And according to AMI is how you determine whether this is low income housing, middle income or upper middle income housing.
So listeners, you want to weigh in on this? What do you think about the Domino Sugar Factory deal? Should the mayor hold it up to get more square footage, over 30% of affordable housing space, 212-433, WNYC, 212-433-9692. Anyone in the business, developers, contractors, affordable housing advocates, where is the tipping point? Can a 70-30 requirement work and still provide enough profit incentives for developers to build our way out of the city's affordable housing crisis? A 70-30 too much? Or what do you think about Domino Sugar? In particular, apparently, Two Trees has satisfied a lot of the initial reservations that people in the neighborhood had. They redesigned it so it wouldn't just be ugly blocks of building blocking the waterfront. It's going to be more perpendicular to the waterfront, as Charles Bagley describes it in the Times today, and with more park space. So what do you think about that? What do you think about this formula in general and anything that plays into it? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for our economic development reporter, Janet Babin. And Janet, I'm still trying to understand the Domino Sugar thing. As you describe it, and this stat was in the Times too, about 50,000 additional square feet for affordable housing, he's going over 70-30. That even 70-30 then isn't acceptable to Mayor de Blasio. He wants something more than 30% set aside for affordable housing. Am I crunching these numbers right?
I think it's fair to say that the developer here was blindsided by this request. Here he is going above and beyond 70-30. He's thrown in a park. He's thrown in a school. He's thrown in commercial office space. So why is it that the administration is calling for more? And I think, and I also have been asking around to other developers and housing advocates, Brian, about why Mayor de Blasio put out there this goal of 200,000 units. It's an ambitious goal. Why name something so ambitious as 200,000 units of affordable housing? And I think it's because it goes back to Mayor de Blasio wanting housing to be a cornerstone of his administration, how he changes New York City to end income inequality. So you reach big. And I can only imagine that the administration here thinks that we're going to set an example to other developers who want to play ball in the city. We are going to name our price, and it is going to be enormous.
So this is a big precedent-setting showdown, in a sense, kind of moment, potentially.
Yes, because, I mean, I have been speaking with developers on background and off the record, and they are saying to me that they have pretty much a profit margin of 6%. And they, you know, to build in New York City, they have to make 6%. And if they can't envision doing a 70-30 split, even with the subsidies they'd get from the city, they can't imagine that working for them economically.
Stuart in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Stuart.
Hi. Yeah, I can imagine developers saying they can't make a profit. They always say that. But my feeling is that certainly the 30% is right in a place like Williamsburg. In Greenwich Village, it might even be 40%, because to develop a building in a more lucrative area, he's going to make more money. He's going to charge much more for the apartments. And since the land may cost more, but he's getting a bonus of height, which doesn't cost him anymore. So I think the entire 80-20 idea is wrong, because it's 80-20 citywide. And the amount of money you can make in one area is very different than another area. As I said, I think in certain areas it should be as high as 40%. And believe me, if you build anything in Greenwich Village that's very tall, you're going to make a lot of money, no matter what you can
buy. Stuart, thank you. That's very interesting. I don't know if anything like that has come up, either from the administration or from anyone else, but the developers could make a lot more than that 6% margin in very high-priced areas and still set aside even more than 30% is Stewart's theory. Anybody else talking about that theory?
Well, I think with the Domino Sugar case we're talking about, Brian, this development, what's interesting there is that they say that the developer says it can revert back to the former plan that's already been approved on 80-20%. So if they can't come to agreement with the city, they're saying that they're going to go back to the plan that's already been approved, that's on the books for 80-20. They're not even going to play 70-30.
Oh, because this is a voluntary negotiation,
right?
They say, after they already got all the formal governmental approvals.
Right.
Is that right? Can they actually do this?
Well,
can de Blasio and the Planning Commission retroactively put on the brakes?
I think it would be very difficult to retroactively put on the brakes. This is on the books, and they have been approved. The old developer's plan was approved. And so, you know, and that's why the developer here can't just say, oh, well, we'll build higher. Because if you wanted to put in a new plan that added more height and density, then you would have to go back to city planning. You'd have to go back and do what's called an environmental impact statement, a new one, which takes years and costs lots and lots of money. So it's not as easy as like, oh, we'll just build higher here. So in this instance, the caller's idea would not work, because this has already been approved. It's on the books for 80-20. They were just going above and beyond.
Jacob in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hello, Jacob.
Hi. I had the pleasure of being at the Excellence Awards, where you were the moderator and you did a splendid job.
Oh, thank you. Oh, the nonprofit organizations, those excellent awards?
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, my family office works with some of the leading design and engineering firms, and if there's any competent developer out there, it is Two Trees. And they've got a long legacy in Brooklyn, but quite a bit of the design and engineering schemes have improved, where you can manipulate some capital stacking structures as well, coupled with various funds that actually help defray costs in creating buildings that are zero carbon, funds up front, where it will assist the developer in creating a higher mix of affordable housing. This is a systemic issue that we are facing in New York City, and I raised that concern back in 2006 at the Association of Building Owners of New York. So the message is, if there is a will, the technology, the capital markets are very, very supportive in creating a higher mix to make a design efficient, where both the developer can benefit and the community at large.
So you think, and this would be, you know, a fascinating thing for Janet, you and your team in the news department to dig into, though I imagine very difficult, and try to come up with an independent assessment of where that profit margin tipping point really is.
So, well, actually, Jacob, there are a couple of funds already in the United States that have done tremendous jobs around other cluster markets, and particularly in California, where one particular fund was founded by Hector Cisneros, the former secretary of HUD, where they've created a lot of zero carbon emissions, green design, efficient housing. It's something that we really haven't paid too much attention to all that much in our wonderful city, only because the temptation of the leverage internal rate of returns were so high, the developers geared towards more revenue matrix of the market. But it's become a bit of a backlash because we're pricing ourselves out for the middle-income families in New York. So there is a way if there's a will.
Jacob, thank you very much. And Janet, there is one group that's being left out of this discussion, I think, because I think you've been learning on your beat that the mayor wants to play ball with developers on zoning, wants to come to yes on high-rises and dense development to achieve, you know, this extra building. So, for example, people who complain about too much height or too much extra density in their brownstone neighborhoods actually might not have an ally in de Blasio because his priorities are different. His priorities are more to get more affordability, correct?
This is something that happened last week, Brian. It was a stunning announcement by Mayor de Blasio speaking to the Real Estate Board of New York. He said in his talk to them, pretty much, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said, I am not going to fight you on height and density. I am all for height and density so long as I get my affordable housing. This is wonderful to news to affordable housing advocates and to people in New York City desperate for a place to live that's affordable. However, it will create some issues in, you know, brownstone neighborhoods, neighborhoods that are lower density, where we think of these cherished buildings, especially, for example, in New York City right now on 57th Street. You know, some of the lower, you know, five-story buildings will be probably demolished in coming years to make way for these tall towers.
Isn't the main issue there shadows into Central Park?
Well, that's one of the issues, but it's also the character of a neighborhood. And 57th Street does have some public transportation, but it's not exactly like a hub, like where you, like Atlantic Yards, where that development is, or Hudson Yards will be. This is an area that doesn't have a great amount of public transportation, so you're going to see a lot denser neighborhood and taller buildings, not just into the park, but for these neighborhoods, and not just 57th Street.
Jessica in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. How are you today?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so I just had a couple of points. One was that I think that they shouldn't use the measure of units, a percentage of units, because I think that the natural migration will be towards the studio one-bedroom apartments where the real crisis is for families. I mean, I think that the price of a two-bedroom apartment has become a sort of form of birth control in Manhattan in many ways. And secondly, along those lines, I was just really shocked when I read the New York Times article today to see that sort of median income was above $100,000. And to compare that across the country is just really, really shocking.
Thank you, Jessica. Yes, and here are those numbers again. Under city guidelines, a family of four with a combined income of up to $51,000 is considered low income. Up to $68,000 for a family of four considered moderate income for affordable housing programs. And up to $107,000 per year would be considered middle income for a family of four. Does that mean that people in families of four making over $100,000, a little over $100,000, can get in effect subsidized housing or housing that's set aside to be affordable for the middle class?
Well, just look at the Atlantic Yards project. I mean, the two bedrooms there are going to run above $2,700. And that's the affordable. The market rate is about $4,500 or more than that. So yes, I mean, it's expensive, even though it's considered affordable housing in New York City. Maybe that's why the administration was calling for more multifamily units in the Two Trees project.
two trees, just to put them in a little context. And the earlier caller had said, if there's a good developer in the city or a city developer who can do this, it's two trees. How do you see their reputation? Because that's the company that developed so much of Dumbo into its current state. And, you know, there's Dumbo is not just a place, a desirable place to live now. It's a destination. People go there to go shopping. There's all that parkland on the waterfront there down under the Manhattan Bridge overpass. So do people like two trees for
yes,
that?
Yes. I would say this is a developer with a stellar background. They're respected in the city. They're respected in the affordable housing community. As you mentioned, the community board passed their project with flying colors, the community board in Brooklyn there
for
Domino Sugar. And they have good relationships with the community. They also are trying to bring on board commercial office space for tech companies that's much needed in Brooklyn. And this is another tension, Brian, that we see the industrial space and the office space leaving New York City to make way for residential units. Two Trees was actually doing a mixed-use project that would incorporate office space for tech firms, something that Mayor de Blasio has said is important to him.
So let me just tack on one question about this completely other housing-related issue, this lawsuit that claims that the city's property tax rates are racially discriminatory. Can you explain the argument?
Well, this is a class action lawsuit that was filed in a state Supreme Court in Manhattan earlier this week, and it alleges that Black and Latino residents are more likely to live in rental buildings over 11 units, and that those renters, through their rent, in their rent, shoulder a higher tax burden than residents of 1, 2, and 3 family homes or of co-ops or condos.
Because the property tax rate is actually higher on those buildings with more units?
It's actually higher on rental units because in the 70s, changes were made to New York City tax code along with the state that wanted to encourage home ownership. Think back to the 70s and what was happening in New York City then. We needed to encourage people to purchase homes, and therefore these property tax laws were changed to favor
buyers.
Buyers, yes.
Uh-huh. So does this have the backing of the mayor, or has he weighed in?
Well, this is going to be difficult because this lawsuit was actually based on a report done by the Furman Center at New York University. Vicky Bean, who is now a member of the administration, headed up the Furman Center. I'm sure she had a hand in writing this report. So this could be very sticky. It'll put the administration in a difficult position because property tax law in New York City, it may be discriminatory. We may find out.
All right. It is a new day in housing policy in New York City. WNYC economic development reporter Janet Babin is covering it. Thank you for clarifying so much of what's going on with the Domino Sugar Williamsburg situation and putting it in a larger context.
Thank you, Brian.
And our listeners from all over, thank you all very much, too. Coming up next, the pros and cons of online activism, followed by the Data Geek's Guide to Winning a Best Picture Oscar. Stay with us.